Welcome to the Round 9 Supercoach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus and I'm joined again this week by FP Donkey.
G'day everyone. What a crazy week. I'm not a fan of these bye weeks. And Monday Night Football, that was such a bad idea during the byes. Really spread the round out too far, and they're doing it again this week with the Thursday night. How'd you go this weekend?
Not that keen to talk about my score this week, but I'll get it done and over with. 15-21, so pretty poor considering what 18 players fielded, and Hodge out late was really painful. You had that two mark, Rioli, obviously. Hodge out late just really killed, because probably would have taken a score of like a 12 off my field with Robertson. So really bad beats this week, Mark. How about you? Did you have 18 playing? Because you seem to crush my score. It wasn't a
particular... I did crush your score. Yeah. It's good, isn't it? I think I had 20 playing. So I had Robertson's 12 out.
No wonder.
I got down to 19 once Hodge was out. That's right. I had 20 before, and then Hodge was out, which put me down to 19. So Robertson's 12 was out, which was nice.
Who was your second lowest? Sorry, Mark.
Laidlaw on 41. Not quite sure why I smashed you this week, but I definitely did. I think we both had Job as captain. Very excited to watch that one come home. Have you still got Tyson?
No, I don't.
That was a huge difference. 136 from Tyson was a really, really big difference. Yeah. When you get a rookie like that, pump out a massive score, that definitely helps your ranking each week. And I think I checked today and I'm within 100 points of you after being beaten every single week for the whole year. 2 weeks in a row I win and I'm well within sight. I'm about 600 places behind you now. I've gone down to 1800th overall, 1840th. I think I've gone up every single week since the first round when I was like 35,000 or something. So just steady progression. Hopefully, if I can get two more weeks of that, I'd be absolutely stoked. This round looks pretty good for me. Round 10 is a little bit tricky with a lot of rookies from round 10, a lot of good premiums from round 10. So a lot of the planning, even for this week for me, is really looking forward to the next round more than this round.
Don't get too excited, Mark, because I'm getting ready to crush it. I'm anticipating, I know you say don't have a crystal ball and that, but these guys all have reasonable job security. So barring any crazy injuries, 22 and 21 players playing in the next 2 weeks. So looking forward to some tides turning and some form returning in the second 2 weeks of the bars.
I think I'm going to be at about 21 and 19. So
comeback opportunity. Here we go.
That's exactly right, especially round 10. Round 10 is definitely going to be really, really tricky for me. Trades this week, I ended up going at a last-minute Cripps to Hallahan. I think we might have talked about Lloyd on the show last week, but Hallahan just presented as a better opportunity in the end, and the fact that so many Hawks got injured worked out really well for that, and pretty happy to be making that trade since Cripps ended up breaking his leg on the weekend. I know that you made the same trade. We'd both be pretty happy with that one. Also did Mitchell to Walker. Very much regretting Walker at the moment. Should have taken Simpson. That was 50-odd points on the weekend. Hopefully Walker comes good. And made a little bit of a crazy trade as a cash out. I did Dangerfield to Ambrose. Just needed Ambrose to play this week and that'll be fine. I've got 744,000 in the bank. This week, if I wanted to, I could bring in Bartel, Pendles, and Stevie J and still have a bunch of money left over. So I was really struggling for ways that I'd actually be able to get enough downgrades in, especially since we didn't get any money from Cripps. Thought that this was a bit of a clever way to go about doing that. Dangerfield might come back in a few weeks. We'll see.
I really needed two players that were not playing this week so that I could get up to at least 8 on the bye this week to maximize scores next week. So Hallahan, Walker, and Ambrose, the exact same ins for me as well, Mark.
Wow.
Great minds think alike. It just didn't quite work out because I was super light on players. We'll move on to questions again. Went to Facebook and Twitter. So thanks, guys, for the questions at SupercoachCoach. And you can connect with Mark at FBDonkey. And of course, facebook.com/SupercoachCoach. So thanks for your support and questions there, guys. I'm going to start off with a question here from Cameron Brown at Need More Hops. Who do you rate as the best downgrade option this week? So he's looking for a rookie, Mark. Who do you like?
After the last night, I think that is 100% clear. Blake Akers, he only played three quarters, but he was close to, or probably St. Kilda's best player for those three quarters. So that would be enough for me to make him pretty enticing to bring in. He definitely presents some problems for me because he is a round 10 buy player, and as I said, I'm cutting it pretty fine going into round 10s. We are going to need some downgrade options, and they haven't necessarily been presenting very good ones, but Akers sort of stands out like a sore thumb.
Is there anyone else that you could potentially look at? Morabito, is he coming back to return anytime soon?
There's talk of him playing this week. I think when he comes back, he will start as the sub. Might even play a few games as a sub. There's a chance that he'll play mainly as a sub for the rest of the year. I know we saw Lachie Neale do that quite a bit last year with Freo. And Joel Tippett from North has played a couple of games. I think that he was mainly in the side, first of all, to cover Scott Thompson, and then the second time, Gold Coast have three key forwards, and so North needed an extra key defender, whereas most sides probably don't have the three tall key forwards. So I think it'll be a week-by-week proposition to him, but when there's not many options, and if he's named this week, then maybe he's someone you should be considering. Not a lot else, man. O'Rourke, still on the bubble. Not really likely to score very well or get games. Billy Hartung looks like a genuine sub player. He's sort of quick. Played sub his first two games for the Hawks. Showed that he can score well in that St Kilda game, but I'm not overly convinced about his job security going forward.
Okay, so that's about all I'm willing to do on that, Mark, because we've spent weeks now talking about building the bank because exactly this sort of situation would occur, and it's panned out that way. So I hope you're all stocked up with a war chest and you're ready to spend it with us as we look at some premium upgrade options, Mark. So let's jump.
Tasty.
Let's jump straight in with Stillmatic's question here from Twitter, and he's asking about SJ, Mark. How happy are we to be able to finally talk about SJ as a legitimate target into our teams? He was a round 8 buy player. He just didn't seem like a legitimate option priced at 115, career best average. Lost his forward eligibility, but bam, gone to the middle, averaging 125 this year, Mark. Is he coming into your team this week?
He was definitely in my original plans, and then Akers has sort of maybe put me a week behind. I think Freo in Perth, I know he has had at least one or two good games over in Perth. Probably just to have a wait and see for a week on him. Stevie J in this week or Akers, one of the two will happen. Really like him as a pick. I think that he's probably fully priced or overpriced. I think that he could post a lower score and you might be able to get him cheaper, but he's also an absolute gun. Could be one of the top three mids for the year.
The exciting thing about Stevie J this year is that players are having to spend more time on field, so he gets to rest in the forward line where we know he scores huge amounts of points. We love when he gets 30 touches and 3 goals because he can score 150 points pretty easily that way. And Jono, I think, even scored 177 in last year's preliminary final against the Hawks. So he's a big game player, and with Selwood taking the tag most weeks, he'll be a pretty good pick. So hot in consideration for me as well, Mark. Now, a question here from Year of the Mind. He's asking about SJ's teammate in Selwood. Do you think he's a top 5 mid, Mark? Given that his break-even's 156 and he only averages, I think, 79, Year of the Mind saying here against Fremantle, so that seems particularly low.
He did have a 30-something against Crowley last year, I think, really, really low. So that would be affecting that.
So should we be waiting a week on Selwood, Mark?
156 break even, and I think so you probably do have to wait a week and try and do something else this week. Is he a top 5 mid this year? I'm a little bit scared that because he did the same thing last year, that I'm being lulled into this sense of security that he's just going to do the same this year.
Yeah, I know. Naturally, players decline at his age.
No, but because he just went so nuts last year after getting really cheap. But it's not obvious and 100% that he's going to do it again.
Yeah.
But because his scoring potential is absolutely huge, I think that that's enough to be him having him in everyone's plans. I know last year a lot of people didn't get him, and you did, Marcus, and you were laughing all the way to the bank. This year, I think that almost everyone will have Selwood within the next couple of weeks.
I'm surprised that he's even at this price, and so thankful that we were able to get him at this price. Selwood's capable of averaging 130 8 weeks in a row. How many players are capable of doing that?
No, that's what I mean. There's going to be an every team. It'll be really interesting to see how the Joel versus Stevie J tagging issue plays out over the course of the year.
I just can't see it leaving Selwood, but you're pretty confident that at some stage John will steal the tag?
I would say so. It's already happened this year. I think in the Collingwood game that happened, McCaffer was able to keep Jono to a pretty limited output.
Okay, then, next question here, Mark, from James Hawkins on Twitter. He's asking about Dane Swan, and he's fresh off the bye. So we've dismissed him earlier on. I think he's gone up in price a little bit off the back of, I think, a 140 since we've talked about him.
Yeah, I think on Anzac Day he had a huge game. I remember seeing that pretty vividly. Yeah.
So do we change our tunes here, Mark, off the bye? Swallow that pill and say pick him up at 560, or?
It's a tricky one. I think that the days of Swanee averaging 125 are gone. And one of the reasons I think that is that he just doesn't play as much midfield time anymore for the Pies. The Pies have moved on. Their best midfield is Pendlebury, Beams, McCaffer, and then you've got a lot of other players to go through, the balls, the side bottoms, and there's just a ton of players to go through. And Swanee's just sort of one of them guys now. And he's even said that himself. I heard an interview with him a few weeks ago. Last year, they were all competing to get into the midfield when the centre bounce was happening, but now they're just sharing those spots around. And I think that he is just settling into that team sort of role and playing a bit up forward, so he'll have his big games and still get his 30 touches probably plenty of the time. I'm just not sure that he's going to have these huge, huge averages. So at his price, and given his past history of scoring and his ability to go big, he's probably not an awful pick. I just don't expect to have a massive, massive ceiling like we've seen in the past.
So if we have, you know, SJ and Selwood as probably a tier above Swan, then Nicky Dowell, who's also off the bye, would probably be in a similar category to Swan at 553K. Moved from Saints to North and relishing the fact that they've got more ball winners and more players to take the attention away from him over at North. So he's averaging 113, which is really quite good. He scored 119 on four of the seven occasions he's played so far this season. Do you think he's a legitimate option this year? He has been very reliable for 115 in the past.
Yes, he is. Given North's draw, he's probably a really good pick this week. At that price, he doesn't seem like someone that's likely to fail. He has been subject to the tag in the past a bit, but North have got plenty of players at least on the same level at him, so he won't get it every week. And yeah, I think the draw is the main factor here. Swanee versus Dell is probably a close one. I think that there's a good chance he'll average about the same over the course of the year.
Jake Cutchin, Mark, 520K, and I've put him on the run sheet. Nobody asked about him. Bit sad about that. Come on, guys.
He's my man. He's my boy, Cutchie. Lucky I didn't pick him at the start of the year. Jesus.
Under 100 four times so far this year.
Cotchie is great to watch, and I love the man. I haven't got much more to pitch in favour of him.
What? That's terrible. He has
huge scoring potential, and Richmond's draw is good. What have you got?
Remember that game where 34 disposals kicked four goals against Collingwood in the preseason? Of course, it was preseason.
Because they don't tag anyone in the preseason.
Yeah, but everyone got really, really excited about Koch. He started with 38 touches and a goal for 118 points. I had a down game, Carlton, 84 points, 25 touches a goal. The Bulldogs had 125 points. Collingwood tagged by McCaffer, 65.
Brisbane, 65, premium mid.
Thanks, Mark. Brisbane, 32 touches, a goal, 134 points. And then Hawthorn and Geelong. And I know, Mark, you'll say that he's played well against Hawthorn in the past, but Hawthorn normally don't tag. And this time, they had that annoying Langford kid running around with him. So 84 points against Hawthorn, who are crushing it. Not that terrible. And then Geelong, 95, 23 disposals and a goal. So, I mean, it's not an absolutely terrible start. And again,
It is. It is an absolutely abysmal, awful start from Cotchin. If you asked his owners, he's lost like 100K. He's way behind the other mids. He has had some good games, but it's been an awful, awful start from Cotchin, and you would want a completely different story in the second half of the year.
Well, I'm just thinking that if you flesh this story out to 22 games, you could easily see it having a happy ending. So I wouldn't be trading him out if I had him in my team. And
no, I wouldn't be doing that.
And I'd be thinking about trading him in if I don't have him. And I don't have him and I'm thinking about him. So
you're saying that it's just a few small games and you've made excuses for him for each of those games? Like, yeah. Ooh, those pesky taggers that are not going to win.
Your beloved Job, who we brought in, scored 80 for us in that first week. It happens.
And what did he score on the weekend?
158, right. But we haven't seen Cochin's big game around the corner. May I remind you who he's playing this week, fresh off the bye? Melbourne, GWS, next two games.
Let's just expand his average out a little bit more. You say it's only seven games. What about if you include last year? So he averaged 106 last year. And 100 this year. That's 28 games where he's averaging well below a premium mid. I'm the biggest Cotchin fan out there. I'm totally hoping the best with Cotchin, and I would love to bring him in, and even instead of CVJ. That would be awesome. That would make my day. But it's a huge gamble here. Obviously, he has the upside. Obviously, he presents some value. But you're basically asking for him to do something that he hasn't done for a year and a half.
I just think that he showed enough in the preseason. I know, again, only a preseason game. They don't tag. But he turned the corner in terms of goal scoring in 2012 when he really lifted his average. Last year, his goal scoring really dropped off together with his scoring. And this year, he kicked 4 goals in that preseason game. And he's kicked 5 goals so far this season.
I think you've actually missed the best argument for Cochran, and that is Richmond have been awful. They're getting Rance back, or they've got Rance back. Deledio's come back. Marek is listed as a test this week. Those three guys are really, really important for Richmond's structure, really important for their fortunes going forward. And if Cochran is going to average 115, it's going to be because Deledio hits some form, takes some attention from Cochran, and Richmond win a large proportion of their games on the run home.
Well, I'll put it to you that Cochran's already kicked more goals than he'd kicked last year, and he'd kicked 21 goals in his 2012 season. And 15 goals over the course of the season can easily account for a large proportion of points. I think he might be in better form this year than last, and you're right, Mark. Hopefully Richmond build form and he becomes a contender. So,
well, last year he was injured. Like, he hurt his ankle in a game against Fremantle, and so that affected his scoring. This year he seems genuinely not injured. He just goes totally missing for really large periods of game.
Look, everybody was talking pretty poorly about Selwood as well before he went on that absolute run. So
he did, and I hope and pray that I am wrong and that he goes and crushes it.
He is their captain, and I don't know, if Mark Murphy can step it up, surely Trent Cochin can step it up. Next question here we've got from Lachlan Hunter asking about Goddard. Is he too good to pass up? The main reason we're talking about him is because he had that injury-afflicted game where...
played bugger all.
And so he's absolutely torpedoed in price. Consider going for Goddard, or should you pay 100k more for somebody like Selwood?
I think that you should aim to get Selwood as well, probably. I think that if Goddard doesn't ruin your round 10 and you can get through that fine, then I think it's a fantastic pickup. He had 40-odd in the first quarter against the Lions on the weekend. I think he was going to track for another really big score, but he copped a pretty heavy knock and sort of probably wasn't able to function at full level after that. And I think that there's a really good chance he could average 115 for the rest of the season. So I think Goddard's a ripping pick if you find a way to get him into your team.
Wow, 115 is a big call. So you're counting on him improving on last year?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's a good pick, but I don't really see how he's viable if you can bring in a player that's round 8 that's already off the bye, you know, 100 potential points there. I just think it's a bit hard to pick him. And we've talked about so many good midfield options already, I think 5 of them. So I just think it's a little bit hard to pick him up.
And he could average 108 or something, and you'd end up having a really frustrating time with it. Presents a whole ton of value and does solve some of the problems with upgrading there.
Question here from Matt Dodman. Would Dixon be a reasonable option so we can use him for ruck cover? It also looks like he'll be doing more ruck work due to the injuries in the team.
We have very different perspectives on this, Marcus, don't we? I'm a big no and you're a big yeah.
Yes, absolutely, Mark. And maybe you should start off with the negative stuff so I can end on a positive note.
Okay, first one is who's coming back? Gorringe is still 6 weeks away, so that's a positive for Dixon. Zach Smith is due to play this week. Now, they've said that that will likely be in the kneeful, but they've also said that given he's been training flat out with the team for at least 6 weeks, he could actually come back straight into the seniors. Well, when we saw Dixon do really well last year, it was because he was basically number one ruck or sharing a decent amount of time in that ruck. And I think if he doesn't spend a lot of time in the ruck, then it really affects his scoring output. He's not a good enough forward at this stage to be relying on that to get the points. They also have Sam Day and Lynch that they're targeting when they go forward, so Dixon's not necessarily getting all the ball anyway. If all their ruckmen are injured, Gorringe, Nichols, and Smith gets injured again or something silly happens, then he's an awesome pick. If he is playing very much a second fiddle in the ruck, then I think he's probably going to struggle to average very well. And he's also not very durable. He's had a whole bunch of injuries in the past.
Yep, those are all compelling points, Mark, and I would agree with rejecting Dixon as a selection, if not for one thing. Ford Ruck MPP, Mark. Get excited about it, I reckon.
So you can link him up with Thurlow, who's never going to get a game.
Basically, I mean, Curry's not going to get a game now with Magic Door coming back into the team. And after they've seen him play a few games, it feels apparent that he's not quite up to AFL grade at the moment.
Not up to it.
And I don't have Derek X. So, I mean, I understand if you have him that you might want to keep him. But even then, if you bring in somebody like Dixon, you get to use Derek as a cash cow. and Dixon is also available to play for your forward line. So I just think the fact that he has that forward ruck MPP, the fact that there's not really any other decent scoring options, I think your other option's Hale. So I'm just basically comparing Hale versus Dixon, because I feel that over the course of the season, they're going to be at least able to step in for one of Jacobs, or I'm so sure Sanderlands is going to need a chop out from somebody at some stage. And so I'd like Dixon to come on at that stage, because I think those points are going to make him more worth it than a Boomer or a Rewalt or whoever else I can get into my team at this stage.
If he comes on in one of those circumstances, that brings one of what, it's not him that's really covering, it's one of your forward rookies that is actually covering Sanderlands, because he would have already been on the ground. He moves to your rucks. Thurlow comes forward and one of your forward rookies gets pushed on the ground. At the moment, Ambrose and Impey, you're looking at 40 points. Given the fact that I expect Dixon to average probably 10 points a game less than most of the other alternatives, those points are going to be more than made up by just having a better premium in your team.
I guess the ultimate goal with Dixon would be to have him on the bench, I suppose.
I think you've explained yourself exactly right. The options for DPP in the rucks this year are terrible, especially compared to last year when we had Nick Nat and Cox and Ryder and just all these great options. They're terrible this year, and I think to me that means it's not a worthy strategy.
All right, Mark, you may have swayed me a little bit in your cam. Next question here from Lewis Reed. Mark, he's asking about Boomer. What do you reckon about Boomer, Mark, off the bye?
Good question. I've been asked this a few times this week. Ourselves, mate, we've both got Rioli, and some people have Ruffy that they might want to get a replacement for, and there's not a whole lot of round 8 forward premiums at all. They're actually pretty poor, the options to choose from. And Boomer does seem to be the best. Price is under 500,000. He has a really good draw coming home. You'd think that if Wells and Del Santo are doing really well, that he won't actually get a tag every week, which might help him. He does seem to do really well when they're winning. So I don't think he's an amazing pick, but I mean, he just keeps surprising everyone. And the talk is that they think he's got 3 more years in him or something. So yeah, at current price, I think he's probably the best round 8 forward option other than Dangerfield, who I also don't have. Interestingly, Lewis, when he does ask questions, says, what about Pavlich to Boomer? And I think that has some merit. I'm probably going to have to consider trading Pavlich myself. I know it's his 300th this weekend, so he'd probably be pretty loath to trade in there. But just like every other forward in the comp, he's in good form. He's playing quite well, but he just keeps getting double teamed. They're just putting all their players onto Pav when they go forward. It's very difficult for him to get marks in that forward 50 and kick goals. So yeah, I think that sideways trading in that regards is not terrible. And I think if you look at around at the teams that rose in the rankings this week, and maybe even some of the leagues that did well this week, I think that there's been an awful lot of sideways trading going on.
Next question here from Blair Dewsbury. Mark, he's asking about Petrie. What do you reckon about him? He's obviously very cheap. Again, you're talking about all these key position forwards struggling. 374K, though, makes him very, very cheap. Could he be a stepladder, potentially?
Is that 374, is he?
Yeah.
Hang on, I'll just ask my wife, mate. She's a big fan. Petrie, any good? Nah, she just laughed. She had him at the start of the year, and he scored like 3 scores below 50, so probably not. And I thought that he was going to get good, and he started good last week and only ended up with 56. Again, he's just like every other premium forward out there, really, really struggling this year.
I think at 374K, you can't really go downward from there. At worst, he makes a good bench cover late in the season. So I'm happy to bring Petrie into my team as long as it suits your cash situation. Key position forwards always look really, really bad before they turn it around. And so as long as you can go up 120, 130K while scoring big, he should be a pretty decent stepladder. And I think we saw Josh Kennedy just kick 11 goals and score 183. And anyone who was on that train would just be absolutely smiling ear to ear. And I think Petrie's capable of that sort of thing. So
I think that if even with the 183, if you ask Josh Kennedy owners, they'd set with his output this year. The key forwards are just not getting it done. You can pay 370 for him, but he might only rise to a 90 average or something, and that'd be a really good result from here.
But, I mean, the point about the key forwards is just to hope to get on at the right time, I suppose. So
I think that is something of the past, though. I don't think that is actually something that is necessarily right this year.
If Petrie was available last week, I would have probably considered him. I mean, we were talking about a crazy grab for cash last week, and I just think that a key position forward scoring big. Seems unlikely when they're not playing well, but all it takes is an 11-goal game, and that stays in your price movement for 3 weeks. And like you said, you wouldn't be happy, obviously, if you start Josh Kennedy at the start of the year, but, you know, imagine you trade him in, and he has those big scores, you trade him out, and you make a whole swath of cash while scoring big. So, I mean,
I'm just interested to hear which keeper would you would actually like to have in your team at the moment.
I'd consider Petrie, I think.
You would be happy to have Petrie in your team?
I wouldn't be happy. He'd be a risk that I'd be currently thinking about taking, yeah.
Okay.
At 374, I don't think he's a crazy bad risk or anything.
I'm just interested because your philosophy of having the top six scorers on each line, I think that I wouldn't be looking at a key forward being involved in that discussion at all.
Yeah, well, that's why I said I'd only think it's good if it works for your cash situation. Like, I have enough cash to just go for a top six forward this week. But if I didn't have that option and, you know, the no downgrade options, then maybe you just trade to a Petrie this week and hope that in a few weeks you can trade him out for someone who's worth more because he scored big while he was in your team. So if it suits your cash situation, that's what you go for. But like we discussed last week, my ultimate aim would be, yeah, to go for the top six. Off that question then, Santos is asking about Nick Riewoldt, another key position forward. He had really bad the last three games. What do you reckon about him? Would you be dropping him if you had him at 435?
435. That is unbelievable. If someone had have tried to predict that a few weeks ago, I certainly wouldn't have believed that. I mean, they're just doing the same to him. I don't know whether you watched the game last night, but the commentators kept saying that every Carlton player, whenever Riewoldt was anywhere near them, would run up and bump him, and they were just all just laying right into him because they knew that that was their only avenue to goal. He did look a bit better last night than he had in the previous 2 weeks, though. I mean, he only got 58 against Brisbane after starting the year completely on fire at 430. There's not a lot you can do from 430. You'd expect that Riewoldt still has some good scores left in him over the course of the year, and maybe his knee's troubling him a bit. It helps you with the buys. I guess you could get rid of him now, but realistically, it's one of those situations where the player has gotten so low now because you kept him that extra week that he was someone that other people would actually consider bringing in at that price. And if a player gets so low that other people are starting to get to value situations, then you're probably better off keeping him than trying to get out. Last week was the time to get out when he had the high break even.
Yeah, I think that's a good analysis of that situation. I'd probably keep him at this price too. Be interested to hear your thoughts now, though, about him after the buys.
Open to Nick.
I guess he's a bit different from the traditional key position forwards in that his work rate is just that ridiculous that he gets so many of that ball up on that wing area. It'd be an interesting discussion to have after his buy, I suppose, but probably not an option for now. He wouldn't be.
Not with the buys coming up and the high break even and his poor few weeks, no.
Okay, so three trades, three upgrades planned for you this weekend, Mark?
Yes, mate. Pendles will finally be coming into my team. That'll be a bit of a relief. I've sort of had to barrack against him all year, and now I can breathe a sigh of relief and just get on the same train that everyone else is on. Considering he scored 180 in round two, which was really, really bad, it actually hasn't turned out too poorly leaving Pendles out. He's basically done what I hoped he would, and that is not go too high with his scores. Most of his scores have been in the 100 to 130 range. So
yeah, Murphy did really well for you too as well with the 113 average in the finish.
A couple of 150s was quite good.
Yeah, so it's an exciting time, Mark. Everybody's upgrading. We've got all this money to watch our players finally get onto the park and score big points. So hopefully this round's a little bit better for everyone. I think it's the easiest of the three buy rounds. So enjoy the upgrades and we'll catch you guys next week.
See you later, guys. I hate the buy.